What?
Now, I'm really sorry to be upsetting you, but I have to warn you.
Warn me?
We were attacked by a werewolf.
I'm not listening to this.
On the moors, we were attacked by a lycanthrope, a werewolf. I was murdered, an unnatural death. And now I walk the earth in limbo until the werewolf's curse is lifted.
Shut up.
The wolf's bloodline must be severed. The last remaining werewolf must be destroyed. It's you, David.
Hey everyone, it's your old pal Bo here. This is Legion Podcast's Horror Hangover, a bi-weekly episodic show featuring your favorites from the Legion Podcasts community, as well as people that maybe you never heard of, and potentially people you just don't like. It's not going to be the case today. Like, today, it's... The top three. It's like, it's somebody you know, it's somebody you like, and maybe somebody you admire just a little bit. So without further ado, my guest today is one Richard Glenn Schmidt of Hello, This is the Doom Show. And to that, sir, I say, hello, this is the Richard Glenn Schmidt Show.
Woo! Good morning. I was thinking, like, who's he talking about? It can't be Richard Glenn Schmidt.
Absolutely. A raconteur, an author, you are a multi-hyphenate, a musician, a bearded man, a be-bearded man.
I'm only mustachioed currently.
Oh, well then get off this show.
Update that profile pic, y'all.
So here's the deal. If you're new to this show, here's what it is. We're just going to chit-chat about some stuff and give you a chance to get to know Richard. And I think the best way to begin with that is to first talk about what is the difference between giallo and gialli? Is one the noun and one the adjective?
One is the singular, which is giallo, and then the plural is gialli.
Okay. So I am a fan of gialli, as opposed to this giallo.
I'm a fan of Bo.
Oh, well, thanks.
Is it short for bone thinny?
No. It's actually short. bone thinny is pretty good. No, it's actually short for Robert somehow.
Oh.
But, all right, so here's the story that I generally tell about this. I'm actually a junior. I'm named after my father, and he went by Bob, but they didn't want to call me, like, I was a hair away from being referred to as Little Bob for much of my childhood. Fortunately, they were just like, you know what, that's terrible, let's just lop a letter off this Bob name and we're gonna roll with that.
And so it's not Ba.
No, they could have gone Ob. I like the direction they went. So, but it, yeah, like I've never been called Robert in any setting. Occasionally, well, like a college class or something where they're just like, you know, I'm not going to tell this lecture professor how to, what my real name is. They don't care.
Well, my dad was also a Richard and he often went by Dick and, and then I was Ricky.
Okay.
For most of my childhood. And then I was like, my name isn't Ricky, it's Rick.
Like, and then you pulled a Schroeder.
Yeah. Right when everyone got used to Rick, I was like, oh, it's not Rick, it's Richard. And then everyone called me Dickie through high school.
Wow. That
was terrible.
You have a very mercurial past with names. That's,
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Now I'm the Tampa Golem.
The Tampa Golem.
Because of the Miami Golem episode we recorded. Because I defend the Jews.
Famously so.
Yeah, I'm actually famous for it.
Right. As a non-Jewish person, and yet famously a defender of the Jews. Kind of a Schindler. Kind of an Oscar Schindler.
That's exactly right.
So, back to the Giallo stuff. I'm trying to pimp your show.
Thank you.
All right, but in all seriousness, I don't know that I say this enough, probably because I'm afraid of the backlash, but Gialli as a film style is a thing I appreciate more than I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I understand why people love it. Like, I'm that way with kind of kaiju films for no good reason. It's just, it's the thing that, you know, vibrates just right. It has the right resonance. And so I'm wondering, like, when, at what point did you realize that Giallo was a thing that was up your alley? And were your parents alerted at the time?
my non-Italian parents.
Right.
You know, it started with Italian horror because I think a lot of horror fans who were kind of bummed out by the 90s, because, you know, you had to really search and search for good horror in the 90s. I think a lot of people kind of gravitated towards the European films that were finally showing up on DVD. And Italian horror was and still is just my passion. I love. I mean, it's like, I love an Italian horror film until it proves me wrong. You know,
right.
Like,
your default is I love you.
Until it bucks me like a bronco, you know, like,
yeah,
my list of, oh, I hate that from Italian horror is super short, because I'm like, you know, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, Manhattan Baby, it's great. Whatever. Nightmare City, that's a perfect film. Anyway.
Yeah, I just watched that recently, as a matter of fact. God. And
my friend hated that ending.
it's not a very good movie, but there is something kind of compelling about it. It's not good. It's just unusual, you know? Like when they break into the aerobic set.
Yes.
It's just like, I don't know what the fuck's going on in this movie anymore, and I kind of don't care. I just want to see where it goes.
And then these
people have cornflakes all over their face, and I'm happy about it.
They look delicious.
They do. They look like the, honey nut clusters of zombies.
In the episode when we covered that one, like, years ago, Jeffrey, the other co-host, called them meatball heads or meatball faces.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They, like that.
Like a breaded beef of some kind, sure.
Mm. That was my other nickname in high school.
Breaded beef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But long story short, too late. Italian horror, next thing you know, you're going through all these different directors' catalogs, and you're watching a giallo by accident. And then there's films like Suspiria, where it sure starts like a giallo, but then it goes off into supernatural stuff.
Yeah, I don't like Suspiria being called a giallo. I don't think it is.
No, I like to just mess with people, because I'm really liberal with what is and isn't a giallo. Like, I accept all the Spanish films that aped the genre. I think crimis from Germany are really great, even though they were actually like the deranged older uncle of the giallo. You know, deranged German uncle.
We all have one.
I know I do. And then, like, British films. There's a lot of British, what I call British gialli. Oh, they're cuckoo.
I feel like this recording is official, because we have the cuckoo clock in the background.
Oh, man.
Which makes it into the theme song. By the way, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Best damn theme song in podcasts Hello, This is the Doom Show.
I'm so lucky, because I heard Matt Farley. I've been listening to Matt Farley's music for many years, Moturn Media, and he actually did that for free. Like, he's a fan of the Doom Show, and I said, okay, man, how much money do I owe you for this song that we're going to make? He's like, it's on the house because I listened to your show. I'm like, what? And this is a guy who's recorded like 18,000 songs. He's hilarious.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But not to derail us, but I felt it was important to draw listeners' attention to the fact that if you, like, even if you think Richard is an unpleasant person and you don't want to listen to him, you still download Hello, This is the Doom Show. You get through the song, and then, you know, it's between you and God. But
and the Doom Show theme is never going to go away permanently, but I am going to kind of retire it, because semi-retire it, because one of our hosts, Nafa, actually passed away, and then, you know, some time passed, and we've included a brand spanking new British person, Simon, and he's filled in the show. So the song won't, you know, it refers to Nafa and it doesn't refer to Simon. So I'm going to try to work out a new, fresh, updated version.
Sure.
I'll break it out just to honor the song and honor Nafa's memory as often as possible.
Yeah, of course. But listeners, if you do make it past the theme song, I'm not saying you have to, but listen at least to that. And then past that, though, like the movies that you're talking about, these Italian horror films, like largely European, like kind of sleazy. You know, I don't know. I mean, were these films must have been low budget within their home countries at the time of production. Yeah. Like these weren't, it wasn't like Italy was like, you know, we've really got something here.
Well, what's interesting about Italy is that they're famously backwards, technologically speaking, for some reason, and they didn't get TVs in homes as fast as we did. That, you know, somebody would have a black and white set, or very rarely somebody would have a color set, but the number of televisions in Italian homes was very low all through the 70s. So they were trying to keep people in theaters. So they kept churning out stuff, and what better way than to have, you know, boobs, blood, the three B's, butts, I don't know.
Yeah,
and that's right. It was really, really, I feel like there's art to disposable cinema like that, and the more generic, the more half-assed a mystery plot is in a giallo, the funnier it is. Then you add into it the bad dubbing too. Oh man, right. It's just a perfect concoction. I mean, there were good voice actors, but a lot of times they didn't even know what the hell they were doing.
I was just going to ask, with this kind of film, like in many cases, a non-dubbed version is unavailable, right? Like it's kind of the English dub or nothing.
A lot of times. Yeah. That's whatever print survived. And usually the English dub survived because there was more copies of it than the Italian. And, a lot of times they would go ahead and speak English on set or fake it as best they could to kind of like, promote it to the British market and to the English market and to wherever. So
it's one of those things. Like, I wish I knew more history. Like I know a little about a lot and a lot about a little, but yeah. Like that, it's one of those things. I have the cursory sort of familiarity with Gialli. You know, like I've seen a lot of Argento and I've seen a lot of
Fonzie
and stuff like that. So, and some of the other outliers, but every now and again, like a movie will pop up on your show and I'm like, not only have I never heard of that, I'm offended I haven't heard of that yet because it sounds so bug shit.
Yeah.
And wonderful and weird. And especially, on Doom Show, there is a lot of kind of care given to the lady leads of these films.
Oh, definitely.
And I like the fact that you guys have some favorites.
Yeah, man.
So let's do a quick list of your favorite of the these lovely lady stars who are often in some of the most ridiculous situations you ever see in film.
Well, one of the most ridiculous is Susan Scott, a.k.a. Nieves Navarro. And she is ridiculous a lot of times because whenever she pops up in a movie, there's a 90% chance she will have a crazy wig in the middle of the movie. It'll be her normal hair. And then all of a sudden, like one movie, she has a silver wig that isn't like silver hair. It's a wig composed of like tinfoil, like circles. It's and in two different movies, she had to go pee pee. Like it's
using those words.
She actually says that her dubbing actress had to say that it was what was it? Death Carries a Cane. They're trying to find out who the murderer is. It's all tense. And she's like, can we get out of here? Because I have to go pee pee. And then, weirdly enough, I was watching a comedy, a sex comedy with her from a few years later. And she just broke into someone's house and was like, I have to go pee pee. And my head exploded. I was like, what the hell? Is that her thing?
Right. That's her catchphrase.
Let's see who else. Barbara Boucher, of course.
That is one of the great names.
Oh, man. She's also one of the sexiest ladies ever. I mean, she's so charming and she's so cute. Occasionally she'll play a bad girl and it just multiplies the hotness. She's in a great crime film called Caliber 9, which I highly recommend. So good. Let's see. Of course, there's Edwige Fenech or Edwige Fenech. I'm still not sure how to pronounce that name. She's still alive, so I can just ask her. I'll call her.
Give her a little jingle jangle. Sure.
Oh, man. She is the brunette bombshell. If you just Google her with the safe search off, it's good.
Yeah, I've been, looking them up. I'm still on Barbara Boucher.
yeah, you'll be there a while.
But yeah, so what's the other one? What's her name?
Edwige Fenech.
All right.
It's sort of spelled like it sounds.
All right. Edwige Edwidge. Mm-hmm. And Fenech is Fenech. For listeners who are playing the home game.
Yes. Or Fenech. I'm still confused. I'll be listening to other people's podcasts and they say it totally different from me. And I'm like, well, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
She's in one of the first like non-Argento, non-Fulci, non-Bava Gialli that I saw, which is Case of the Bloody Iris, which if you've never seen a Giallo before, watch Case of the Bloody Iris. It is a good time film.
You know, and we could all use more of those. I recently watched Maximum Overdrive for no other reason than I was like, I need this dumb movie poured into my eyeballs.
Man. Stephen King directorial debut and swan song right there.
It's never has a movie promised so much and delivered so well in a completely unexpected way. That movie is the lack of chemistry between our leads in that movie is palpable. Like it's a thing that just stops the movie fucking dead. And any scene where it's like we're gonna have an intimate moment between Emilio Estevez and the lady whose name I can't remember, it just, that movie screeches to a halt, which is ironic because it's about trucks. Right, like outside the the diner, the trucks actually stop and are like, are you kidding me?
We can't believe this movie either.
Right. Yeah, it's the Green Goblin truck. Like, it's a living.
Somehow Stephen King came up on a Doom show not too long ago, and I decided to do my Stephen King impression, and it was just me going, this thing called me an asshole.
That's
what he says in that movie. Then I realized I don't have a Stephen King like impression at all.
Yeah, it's a weird voice because he looks like he should be a bass, and he's more of an alto.
like a needly alto.
Yeah, it's a little nasally, and you know, and like somebody posted up the GIF of him doing the promos for Maximum Overdrive, where he's like, "I'm gonna scare the hell out of you," and it's like, "Oh, that is the least scary thing I've ever seen."
Right.
He looks scary because he's kind of cockeyed and he's got the big beard. And you're like, okay, well, that's kind of terrifying. And as soon as he opens his mouth, it's like, oh, this movie is going to be awful.
It doesn't help. I mean, it doesn't help him be more scary that he looks like the Easter Bunny, too.
A little bit, yeah.
But that's back in the day. I swear he's had braces since then.
Maybe so. Maybe he just got it shaved down. Maybe after the van. He got some teeth knocked out, and he was like, maybe not so prominent on the front this time around, on his second chance teeth.
The advance for Insomnia back in the 90s paid for the new choppers.
Oh, money poorly spent, but there's no need for that book to exist.
Thank you.
Every now and again, like, Stephen King's one of the most important writers of the 20th century. There is no question about it. And one of the best, like, he's a great storyteller, but every now and again, man, when he whiffs, you can just hear the bat whistle through the air. It's right. It was like, oh, that wasn't close. That's awful. That's just a bad book. And then he'll do something like Bag of Bones and you're like, oh no, he's still an incredible storyteller.
I haven't read that one.
That is an underread, underappreciated Stephen King novel. It's one of his most elegant. Nice. As a haunted house kind of story. It's really good.
Check it out.
But yeah. Anyway, so what were we talking about before we start making fun of Stephen King?
I was making lists of hot giallo ladies.
Oh, right. Then Barbara Boucher and then Edwidge Finesse. Who does, she's got the Barbara Steele eyebrows.
Yeah, she's got lots of things. it's insane. She's one of those actresses that was painfully aware of how hot she was. So her gialli, the numbers just pale in comparison to the multitude of sex comedies. She's done like, I don't know, like 50 sex comedies. It's crazy.
And according to Google image search, she has a lot of very wide split tops. Like, she's a big fan of the barely holding the cleavage together as a fashion
style. Oh, yeah. But amen.
Oh. Anyway, yeah, I mean, God bless her. Good Lord. When she was a young woman, there is not much to complain about. She is beautiful. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and you know, because they're Gialli films and directors seem to be always trying to top one another in terms of what's the weirdest way we can do this.
Yes.
You know, like the ice picks and corkscrews and shards of glass. And I mean,
gloves with spikes on the end of it.
Sure. Sure.
Ah, beautiful.
Yeah, it's like I said, one of those things that I always feel like if I took the time, I would love all these obscure little corners of Italian horror cinema, but then I don't do it. it's a bit like I'm jealous of the knowledge you have, and it should be noted, if you go to the Amazon, which is a popular online retailer, there you can find Kindle versions as well as paperback versions, I would assume, of the Doomed Movie-thon books.
Yeah.
Collected omnibuy.
Mm-hmm. I went about it a weird way. Instead of just doing like reference books, I just recorded the movie-thons I have. So the Giallo Meltdown, it's frustrating for me now to read it because especially the early movie-thons, they were my first encounters with these films. So I'm writing in the moment, seeing it for the first time. And a lot of times I'm kind of like on the scene reporter, like, and now her top is off. And right. Now there's a severed head bouncing down a flight of stairs. You know, like, I wasn't really commenting on if I like the movie or not, but it was definitely the madness of like the 18 film movie-thon over a weekend. And I love it. It's like a little slice of my life that I captured. I hope nobody picks up Giallo Meltdown and, you know, looks for it, looks through it as a reference book, you know. They'll be
it's
like
a memoir.
This is amazingly unprofessional. What a great guy. Look at all those exclamation points.
He's emphatic.
He's epileptic. Well, no. Sorry, if anyone has epilepsy, I feel really stupid now.
Oh, it's a big, big subset of our listener base. So
Tampa Golem.
Yep. Tampa.
I defend the epileptics.
Right. Oh my God! A Jewish epileptic is basically free room and board at your place perpetually.
Perpetual room and board. That's hello. This is the Doom Show. But yeah, Giallo Meltdown's available. My other book, Cinema Somnambulist, is available. I wanted to have my blog easily available in paper form because I almost said nymphomaniac, but I guess I'm more of an egomaniac.
Yeah.
I could be both.
Yeah. One does not exclude the other.
Thank you.
Right. It's a big tent. Here at Legion Podcasts, we accept all kinds.
So are you saying you pitch a big tent?
I wish I could boast.
Can I do it for you?
Please.
He's huge.
It's really a problem. it's my Billy Zane voice from the Twin Peaks show. By the way, thanks again to everyone listening to that. There's been, that's a real dumb thing we do.
No, it's madness and I love it.
So we've actually been talking about like, how do we swan song this run of shows? Cause we're almost done with season two and we're about to start, into the new stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, we're kind of the end is in sight, right? So we're trying to figure out. Like, this has been such a weird run of shows. It doesn't seem right that the last episode is just like, and that was Twin Peaks. All right, bye, everybody. So we're trying to think of something. And the last thing I pitched was that we should end on all of the dumb voices we've been doing singing My Way.
Oh, yes. Just don't do it in a Hong Kong nightclub.
Oh, most certainly not.
There you go.
I feel like we have covered Giallo a bit, and I always like talking about it because I don't know nothing, and you know lots of stuff. So, listeners, if you're like me and you're dumb, I'm a defender of the dumb, Richard. Those are my people.
garbage people?
Garbage people. Real. People with an unsettling lack of awareness of the world around them. That's my breed. So if you're like me, check out Hello, This is the Doom Show. Available, of course, on legionpodcasts.com as well as on iTunes and all kinds of podcast platforms that are so prevalent today, Richard. So let's chat about some movies. I like to just kind of hit some highlights of stuff what I've been watching.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I recently rewatched Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I've probably seen that movie like four times at this point. And every time I watch it, that is the like biggest, silliest warm hug of a horror movie that ever was, I think. It is so like good-hearted, which is weird to say about a movie where somebody gets a weed eater to the face. But it is an adorable film, and I really love it. It's kind of a comfort movie for me at this point. It's like, oh, I know I'm going to have a great time, and I like these characters and that kind of thing. Even if I think the third act is maybe gets a little loosey-goosey More so than I would like, but yeah, I love that movie.
My Skype recorder was just beeping at me, so I totally missed what movie you were talking about. What movie?
Solo? No, I was talking...
Speaking of warm hugs.
Speaking of big warm hugs and plates of things. No, Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. Yes, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It... There, and I'll tell you, I've identified, I think, in this most recent rewatch, the point where I found the place of peace within that film. And it's early goings. It's when they get pulled over by the cop. And there's the gag with Taylor Levine, like, stuck in Alan Tudyk's lap. And, of course, the joke is, he's giving him a blowjob.
Yep.
And so the cop sees this and he's giving him, like, looking at him a bit askew and whatnot as he's questioning them. And when he leaves, I think it's Tyler Levine who says, like, why was he looking at us so weird? And Alan Tudyk was like, I don't know. I guess maybe we're just strangers. And it was that they did not understand that he would have been making fun of them. For being gay or otherwise. And it's like, well, these characters are so purely good-hearted that it just never occurs to them that someone would be discriminatory even. And I think that's the whole movie. Like, it's just like that first scene where Tyler Levine is bringing the girl that they have kind of accidentally kidnapped breakfast. And he starts berating himself because he thinks she doesn't like the pancakes. Instead of being horrified that, you know, she's in a remote cabin with two weirdos. But,
oh my God.
But it's such a wonderful moment because it shows what a sweetheart he is. And the whole movie kind of, like, it lands so squarely on that firm foundation of, at the end of the day, we're all here to have a good time. And these are nice guys. And I like that a lot. I like every now and again, like, I see enough nihilistic horror that on occasion you need that movie that's like, you know what? Everything's going to be okay, Bo. You're
totally,
you're here with your old pals, Tucker and Dale. What's going to go bad? But yeah, I do adore that film. What about you, Sirway? Anything you've been watching that, kind of stuck in your craw?
I finally caught up with the rest of the horror community and watched The Void last night.
I rewatched that again recently as well. What did you think of it?
I was really impressed. I liked it a whole lot. The 80s-esque score mixed with the Lovecraftian and just that, you know, oh man, like Hellraiser meets The Thing gore. It was very pleasant. Wouldn't mind rewatching it again. So I'm glad that it wasn't overhyped for me. Like, sometimes people go a little bonkers, you know, like, this is the greatest film ever made.
Right, right. Like, you gotta see The Void, man.
It will fill your void.
Right. It's the old Simpsons line of, you know, there's a hole in my life that I've tried to fill with what was it, family, God, and work.
But yeah, it was just really solid. I wish that there'd been even a little light. I mean, granted, the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, is a train, but I really wish there'd been a little bit of levity.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little, you know, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
You know, something like as bleak as, I don't even know if it's because of its comedy, if it's secretly bleak or not, but like Reanimator. Reanimator is really funny.
Yeah.
And
incredibly dark.
Exactly. Dr. Herbert West is amazing and so fun to watch on screen because of Jeffrey Combs' performance. But the movie is so bleak and so, like, I don't know. It's like morbidly morbid. That's like double morbid.
Yeah.
And this film reminded me of like From Beyond and stuff like that. So, and From Beyond also has a little bit of levity to it.
Yeah. I would argue there From Beyond understands how ridiculous it is. all right. So here's why I don't agree about The Void. I don't think it's a terrible movie. I'm not bagging on it as a film, but first of all, the first time I watched it on a streaming service, and I don't know if it was because it was streaming or whatever, but the quality of the image was a little dark.
Yeah.
And that movie is already kind of dark, not figuratively, like literally this thing takes place in a bunch of tunnels in a hospital at night. And so all the effect stuff, I couldn't really make out. And so all this movie I'd heard about having all these incredible special effects, well, I could barely see any of them. Right. And so all I'm left with is the story and characters, and that's where maybe The Void isn't so great for me. Mm. So when I rewatched it, it was a much better quality version of the film. Watched it, you know, just on DVD, and it was like, oh, okay, now I can see the stuff, and yeah, all that stuff is really cool and creepy, and I like this movie a ton more now because I see all the fun stuff. But I still think that the humorlessness bothers me as well. But it's also that maybe because of the humorlessness of it all, I just don't really like the characters that much.
Yeah, doesn't leave you a lot of there's no good time Charlies, as Brad would call them.
Well, or even that, you know, your main character is just kind of this, you know, kind of fuck up cop that, I, you know, the nature of his relationship with his ex is sort of the driving factor of that character. And beyond that, he just seems like kind of a decent dude, I guess. I just never felt like I understood that much beyond the relationship he had with, you know, his ex, what that character was, and kind of vice versa with her. And the father and son duo, I was like, I don't know what's going on in this farmhouse scene, and I kind of don't care. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a terrible movie. It's just, maybe it was the victim of hype for me because they were like, oh yeah, it's kind of a throwback film. And it certainly is, but I think it's just a throwback film. Like, I don't think it ever rises above being a combination of some stolen parts. But eh. So that's why you're wrong. No, but
I know. Well, I'm so passionate about it that it really hurts me.
I just feel like I'm anticipating the conversations I'm going to have at the end of the year, like when we start doing top 10 lists and people are throwing The Void on their list. And I got to have this conversation. I'm practicing for the mini conversations I'm going to have in December, January, about why I don't think The Void is one of the best movies of the year. I don't think it's bad. I think people should watch The Void. I think it's got, it's fun, but I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's a fine movie.
I think it's one of those ones that should have been in the theater.
I think that
would have been one, like, at some point, The Black Coat's Daughter was playing near me. And I knew so little about it that by the time I went, oh, I want to see the, oh, it's gone, you know. And this seems like a bigger budget. I mean, it's still a modestly budgeted horror film, but they did a lot with a little. But I think that would have been so much fun in the theater.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it probably would have benefited, actually, from a theater, like an audience experience. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's chit chat about some news that I'm interested in. Here's the reality of this, folks. We only talk about news stories that I see, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And a lot of stuff I don't find very interesting. This
hard to please.
I am. I'm fickle. We're not going to discuss this stupid Annabelle movie until I'm proven wrong, unlike you with Giallo and Italian films. If I hear The Conjuring, Annabelle, or The Nun, or whatever the hell it is, I assume it's terrible until someone tells me differently.
Mm.
And most of the time, they're lying. No, Conjuring 2 is really good. No, it's not.
I was disappointed.
That movie is, it's too long and it's too up its own ass. Anyway.
Just like me.
Too long? That's what people have called you?
No.
Never.
Not at all.
Not once. All right, so this is cool. This is something I'm really interested in. The Cabal cut of Nightbreed, the one that has been much talked about, much discussed, occasionally seen, but is now going to come out on good old-fashioned Blu-ray, where the masses, the plebs, such as myself, finally get to take a peek at this thing, and I am super curious to see it.
Nice. God, I haven't seen Cabal since I was a kid, and it was one of those movies that I loved when I was a teenager, and now I'm like, I should rewatch that sometime and eventually check out this Cabal cut I've been hearing about. Because did they release like a version with the VHS, like the video quality, like would kind of cut back and forth between the film and the cruddy look, or was that just a?
Yeah, so it's 12 minutes that have only ever been on VHS.
Okay.
And yeah, and you know, it's did the tours in 2012 and 2013 when it roamed around and people could come out and see it, and now now it's going to be its own Blu-ray, and I'm very curious. I haven't seen that footage. And more than that, I'm curious how they cut it together, because I think Nightbreed is a very good but very flawed movie.
Mm.
And I don't know if extra footage can fix it, but I'm curious to see him try. And I've heard there's more Cronenberg as the creepy mask killer, and that's not a bad thing.
Man, he should still make that movie of just him being that character. That was that mask. Yeah. Is one of the best freaking like slasher villain masks in a non-slasher movie ever.
Yeah, it's amazing. That whole character is one of the most frightening things about Nightbreed. And I'd like to see that movie, even if it was just him, you know, it was like his weekend running errands and whatnot. I would pretty much watch anything David Cronenberg, in or out of character. I just want a camera that follows him around and records his innermost thoughts. He's such a fascinating figure to me.
I want to read his diary.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, he's the kind of guy that would Laura Palmer it, where it's like, I've got the diary, but then there's the secret diary. Yeah.
Dear real diary.
Right. The other one is fake.
Oh, man.
I'm throwing him off the scent. I'm going to do a fly too, I swear to Christ. They did a fly too. I just remembered.
Oops.
Shit. I'm going to do a fly three. So that's cool. And so let's talk about the Blue Whalen, which you said you were personally looking into. So this is for listeners of Hero Hero Go Show. You may recall back on the Suicide Club episode, there was a story in the news at that time where Misty Parker and I were talking about this Blue Whale deal, which is a series of kind of an online game through social media that results in the final task being to murder yourself. And some people had done it. Strangely enough, like apparently in some cases, all you got to do is tell somebody like, hey, you should kill yourself. And then they do. And that's dangerous and wrong. So this happened again, but here in the States in Texas, that's still technically the United States. But, yeah, so what the hell, man? Like, why are horror movies now real life? Is that just the world we live in now?
This is the world we live in. Oh.
It kind of is. It's upsetting to me that now there is a, like, I have real fears about this thing spreading and starting to get messages asking me if I'm connected to myself.
I was just about to say that. Are you connected with yourself, Bo?
Oh, I don't think I am. That's what terrifies me. I'm going to end up in that hallway.
I'm going to end up with those kids on the stage.
Yeah, just spouting nonsense at me until I finally just submit and let them peel my skin off.
That's fine.
Yeah, probably right. I mean, it's what the gypsy said it would happen.
When you sent me this article, I was sitting there looking at it, and I was like, you know what? I should look up what the rules are of this challenge. You're supposed to do a series of challenges, and the last challenge, of course, is to kill yourself so you can blue whale it.
Sure. But let's, before we blue whale it, what do we have to do to just be blue whalers?
You have options. I'm giving you options. So on Reddit, we have the poorly translated from Russian version of the rules, or do you want the better translated version of the rules?
Are they the same? Because I feel like Russia...
They're the same, but the Russian ones are gibberish because they were translated so badly.
Mm, that does sound good. All right, let's do those.
Okay, here are the 29 rules. Oh my god. Okay, there's like 50 rules, but apparently 30 through 49 are all the same.
Oh, okay. Well, it's important to break that out. Okay. You want to get granular with the data, don't you?
Yes. I want to get molecular.
All right.
Okay, number one. On the arm blade, cut F57. In parentheses, it says blue whale, comma, 420. Number two. Wake up at 420 and watch scary video. Number three, cut lengthwise veins of the arm, in parentheses, not deep, only three cuts. Number four, draw a whale on a piece of paper.
Yeah,
number five. Yeah, see, I'm following this. I've been doing this while we're talking. Number five, if you're ready to become a whale, you write yes in the blade leg. If not, do with their hands whatever you want. Parentheses, doing a lot of cuts and so on. Okay.
All right. So you can carve this into your leg or into your hands is what I took from that.
I think it's supposed to be in, but it says KN. So it's kin, the blade leg.
Yeah. Okay.
Number six, in code.
Oh, well, all right.
Number seven, scratched F40.
I like their last record.
Number eight, write in the status, # I'm a whale.
Oh, again, easy.
Number nine, should overcome your fear.
Okay.
Number 10.
I like that one that it doesn't say you have to. Just you should. You should overcome your fear. Maybe you don't.
Number 10, get up at 420 and go to the roof.
All right.
Number 11, it is necessary to scratch out a whale on the hand, in parentheses, or make a drawing on the hand.
Drawing, yeah.
Yeah, do like a henna tattoo or something.
Yeah.
Number 12, the whole day watching scary video.
I'm one step ahead of you, all right.
Number 13, this is my favorite, listen to music that they send to you.
All right.
Number 14, cut the lip.
Sure.
Number 15, poke the needle arm.
Everyone's got one.
Number 16, make yourself hurt.
Okay.
Which, yeah, we did that 13. I did that already. Anyway, 17, go to the roof of the largest and stand on the edge.
Okay.
Are you doing these while we're talking?
Yes, of course. Okay, I'm on my cell phone.
Me too. 18, going to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
19, climb on the crane. Now, it doesn't specify if that's a crane or a crane.
The bird or the vehicle.
Exactly. Number 20, check to trust.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. 21, it is necessary to talk on Skype with a whale.
Okay.
Or Richard Glenschmidt.
Yes.
Number 22, sit down on the roof of the feet.
Sit down on the roof of the feet.
Yep.
Okay.
Number 23, my new favorite step. Again, comma, the job with the code. I'm thinking about doing that. 24, a secret mission.
All right. Assumedly, they are giving you one, or it's just like, you know what? I'm going on a secret mission.
How about on 24, instead of secret mission, you watch Top Secret?
What if your secret mission is to watch Top Secret?
And then not kill yourself, because that movie's great.
Yeah. Hey. It's great.
Number 25, meet with whale.
Mm-hmm.
Number 26, you say the date of death and you must accept.
Oh, so I'm calling my own hit there?
Yes.
Like I'm pointing to the center field and like I'm going over the fence, people.
Honestly, I don't think this kid in Texas did even half of these rules.
I it would be fascinating though to know if like the coroner's report was like multiple cuts all over his body. Also, he did the code.
F40. Number 27, 420, go to the rails.
Uh-huh, do cocaine, I'm with you.
Yeah. 28, do not talk with anyone.
All right.
Which, I mean, I want to share all this stuff, so I don't know. 29, give an oath that you're a whale.
All right.
Now, here's where it gets weird. From 30 to 49... you every day wake up at 420, watch videos, listen to music, and every day doing one cut on her hand, which is like a plot twist to me, and then talking to a whale. So you have to do all this while talking to a whale.
So in theory, you would be like, you know, I'm on day 37, and today I woke up at 420, and I watched an old Muppet Show episode. I think I'm ready to do this.
Wait, if you watch the one with Vincent Price, though, you will not kill yourself because that's a great episode.
Or Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper's a real strong episode.
Although the Peter Sellers one, you will want to kill yourself.
Yeah, it's strangely disappointing. But then well, there's the Mark Hamill one.
Exactly. So number 50 or number one. On this translation, for some reason, the last step is also the first step. It says, number one, we jump. And in parentheses, it says, hangs up, comma, jump out the window, comma, you go under a train, comma, and this is the most beautiful word I've ever seen, negative side tablets.
I don't even know what that means.
I think negative side tablets are the anti- Flintstones vitamins.
Oh, like tablets as in pills, negative side tablets. Oh my God. Why is that not a band?
So yeah, right under this whole list, why isn't that a band? So right under this whole list, there's a proper translation, but I think we should only do the Russian ones.
Yeah. I just don't see what the entire thing seems to be focused around hurting yourself. And I'm really headed the other direction, where I'm a creature of comfort.
Yeah, you're pleasing yourself, which I'm assuming is what you're doing right now.
Almost constantly. that's why I have to work from home.
That's just old Bonthony.
That's what you're going to get when Bonthony comes on to work here. You don't want a video conference, trust me. It's like we hired multiple MIGs in the next cell, essentially. So Quentin Tarantino, who is a very famous film writer and director, for those who don't know. So his next movie, he says, is going to be about the Manson family. And I heard some rumors about casting. And it was Margot Robbie for Sharon Tate.
Okay, that's not bad.
And Jennifer Lawrence for Squeaky Fromm.
Hmm. As long as she's interested in the role, unlike Mystique.
Or
where she's so sick of it and she's so bored. And they keep giving her all of the shittiest lines. And it's like, oh, God, let her go.
Yeah, I saw, look, I saw Passengers, so me and Jennifer Lawrence aren't getting along right now.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
It's, don't. That's a real shame, but don't see that movie. But deal. Then, you know, I'll go back and watch Winter's Bone-thony, and remind myself, like, oh, yeah, she's also an amazing actress.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's sort of the best thing ever. I like Quentin Tarantino's films quite a bit, and I like the Manson story quite a bit, and I am really excited by the idea of what that combination could lead to, because I think it would be at the very least fascinating.
Yeah. Well, he's been talking up doing a horror movie for a little while, and I'm like, and then of course he seemed to have gotten that out of his system with Death Proof, but I'm like, no, I want Quentin Tarantino to do a supernatural horror film, you know, not a co thing with Robert Rodriguez, like From Dusk Till Dawn, which is great.
Sure. Yeah.
But I would love to see Quentin Tarantino's characters get bogged down in like the really like nuanced details of demon possession for 2.5 hours. I think that'd be really funny. But
amazing.
Like, I know there's a lot of cineasts, which I think that's how you say that word, who like really hate Quentin Tarantino for his mixtape kind of like drawing on so many influences kind of thing. And I'm like, but isn't that really fun?
Well, like, and it's the combination he uses, you know, like it would be the counter to The Void in my mind of like here, The Void is very obvious about its references and just kind of lays them out for you. Whereas with Tarantino, it's like, hey, I've got all these ingredients, but I'm going to make something that tastes different than that.
Exactly.
And it, oh man. I mean, Hateful Eight, I know a lot of people kind of hate on Hateful Eight. but I thought that movie was, again, fantastic. You know, I almost enjoy that movie more before it gets violent.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. It's one of those movies that I'm not in any hurry to see again. I'm really glad I saw the 70 millimeters was going around. But I just have no desire to ever watch it again. I don't know. There's just something about it that didn't click with me, but I enjoyed it in the experience in the theater. That was good.
Yeah.
In the moment. Do you have a hands down favorite Tarantino film?
I mean, I think it's probably Kill Bill.
Yes.
Just as a unit. I don't think of that as two films, like Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 as a single entity. I think it's just Tarantino doing everything he loves turned to 11. And it's wonderful for that, you know, the everything from the Daryl Hannah whistling to you know, the one-fingered death punch and all that. I mean, it's just audacious. That's what I like about it. That movie is the arena glam rocker of the Tarantino catalog and does not care what you think about it. Anyway, what about you? What you got a favorite?
The same.
Yeah,
absolutely the same. That it's the most watchable for me of his stuff. I can just rewatch it and rewatch it and rewatch it with, I think, close second Inglourious Basterds.
Man, I would kind of go back to Reservoir Dogs.
There you go.
There's something about that movie. There's a rawness to it and an inventiveness to it. Like the scene with Tim Roth in the bathroom telling the joke. And
yes.
It's one of those moments in cinema. And maybe that's why it's a hometown favorite for me, is it, watching that movie was in some ways revelatory. of like, I've never seen a director do something like this, and it's so energetic. And the fact that you're set in a single room for most of the film, but it never drags. It just keeps pumping. And anyway.
Ooh, when is Quentin Tarantino going to do his comic book movie?
You know what? I would totally see it. I mean, I don't think it would ever really happen, of course, but if he was like, you know, I'm going to do my take on Batman.
Nice.
I would, I mean, I couldn't give that movie enough money to see it. I want to hear Batman just talking about dicks.
No, it'd be Batman just staring at Poison Ivy's feet.
Right. Uma Thurman reprising her role as Poison Ivy.
I didn't even think of that. That's so perfect. Wiggle my little toe, my darlings.
Yeah, exactly.
However Poison Ivy talks, I don't know.
I think that's... I felt like I was in the room with Uma Thurman. So that's... Anyway, I hope all of this comes together. And
did you say Ruma Thurman?
Ruma Thurman. Roomba Sorry. Thurman. is what cleans my floors.
He definitely doesn't suck.
I feel bad because I really like Uma Thurman. And I don't think she is in anything I like other than Tarantino movies.
The truth about cats and dogs? Come on, bruh.
I mean, sure. Let's anything that is that can be referred to as a Janine Garofalo vehicle is an automatic watch for me.
I agree completely.
So, George Romero. Speaking of talented directors, and question mark. Shit.
Oh, doctor, I can't wait for this.
So he is going to market with a script that is written. And let's be honest, that's all this is. He wrote a script with a dude and has some producers on board, but he's got to sell this thing. Yep. And this thing, in this case, is a film entitled Road of the Dead. Which on its face, just hearing the title, I would say like, okay, George Romero doing another dead movie. I mean, let's say the past couple haven't been great, but
yeah.
I'm open to the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the idea, which is that it's basically, as he describes it, Fast and the Furious with the zombies, where the zombies are driving cars around. Yep. Richard, one question. Who is asking for this?
One answer, me. This sounds great. I mean, honestly, if this will never happen, but if this happens, and because even if it's as bad as like that Repo Man sequel, like Repo Girl or Repo Chick or Repo Woman, whatever it was called.
Uh-huh.
That it's just this like 999% CGI terrible mistake movie. If this is the same thing, then I'm totally down with this.
It's I just think you're starting to become a parody of yourself. When the man who invented the modern zombie film
mm-hmm.
is forced to try to make anything, any movie. And I think maybe that's part of what's at play here, is that I'm sure George Romero would like to do other stuff. No one's going to give him money to do other stuff. They're going to give him...
That's too bad.
It really is, because things like, you know, even Season of the Witch and, you know, Martin and the Crazies.
Martin is great.
Martin's amazing. And I would say the Crazies is right next door to being a great movie.
Yeah.
Maybe not all the way there, but it's close.
And, very close.
And so he does interesting stuff. It's just he hasn't done interesting stuff in a long time, because the only thing he's allowed to make anymore is these Of the Dead movies. And you kind of get the sense that he didn't give a shit about this anymore.
Mm.
But he has to. You know,
making a movie is hard. So
yeah,
it's not, especially when you're, what is he, 98 years old now? What is it?
He is 113 years old. George Romero.
Coincidentally, I'm wearing my Night of the Living Dead t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, that's the heartbreaking part of this is we're kind of goofing on this movie, but this is a director who has given us some of the like towering achievements in horror.
Totally.
And that's why it's so sad. Like, and this is why I'm glad John Carpenter didn't make a movie after The Ward.
I've seen, you know, as generic as The Ward is, at least it's super competently made.
Sure. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you can tell his heart's not really in it.
Yeah.
And I'd rather him not make a movie than make a half-hearted one. Mm. I feel like we may yet see another John Carpenter film because he seems to be creatively churning still.
Totally.
And there might be that thing that brings him back. So
he's one of those people that seems to be thriving in retirement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's and unlike, you know, Toby Hooper, who's he should probably have some work to do.
Well, and, you know, we talked, not you and I, but recently I was having a conversation with Duncan about John Carpenter and my unfettered love of that guy. I like the fact that John Carpenter doesn't give a shit and hasn't for some time. And by some time, I mean starting around 1978.
Indeed.
Where his attitude in filmmaking seems to have been, how about you go fuck yourself if you don't like it? And that has gone on to this day where now it's, you know, music and that kind of thing. And he just does whatever turns him on. But yeah, so unfortunately, George Romero does not have the, you know, the money, first of all, or the grace of a John Carpenter, and instead
doing a character study like Martin, or you know, something quiet supernatural like Season of the Witch.
Yeah, or like I think he would love to do a movie like that. I just don't think anyone's going to give him money to do a movie like that, because when you hear George Romero, you think of a zombie movie, and if the guy who is famous for zombie movies came to me and said, you know, I want to make a movie about aliens, I mean, like, get the fuck out of here. What about zombies who drive?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
Right. And he's just like, yeah, all right.
I mean, I wasn't going to share this, but I think this is an appropriate time. Just the other day, I was actually talking to George Romero.
Oh, good.
And I said, George, I wasn't going to bring this up, but just the other day, I was talking to Steven Spielberg. And I said to Steven Spielberg, look, I don't care if we're not romantic anymore, but I'm not ready to cut off the physical side of our relationship, Steven.
That's understandable.
Yeah, that's all I had.
Yeah,
that's it.
I appreciate any and all references to The Color Purple.
Me too. Tampa Golem.
Tampa Golem.
Defender of black people.
On Twitter, at Tampa Golem.
Oh, shit. I got to go do that real quick. I need that dummy email account again.
Yeah, you got about, I don't know, 30 minutes. So one last news story before we play a little game. And that is that The Grudge is being remade. Now, you may recall that Ju-on, The Grudge, was a Japanese horror film directed by Takashi Shimizu, and Sam Raimi and his folk bought the rights to remake that film here in the States. And Raimi, who would not stop saying Shimizu-san in press conferences, brought on Takashi Shimizu to I feel like I'm about to get iced tea when I hear that. It's a weird association, but I got it.
We only have a bunch of cuckoo clocks because we're in our 70s. It's fine.
Right. I assume that there are a number of quilts at easy you reach have no at all idea. Times.
You have no idea.
I think it's great. I'm
we right have the most right. quilts in Florida in this house.
Richard Glitchmidt, secret old man. doesn't understand his phone as well as he would like people to believe.
Hello, I'm talking to you.
Can you hear me? So Sam Raimi hires Takashi Shimizu to remake his own movie and makes what I would argue is an as good version of the original. You know, it's if you I saw that first, and that's why probably I think that way. And then gotcha. I saw the original and I was like, oh my God, you know, that's in some ways better, but you know, you weren't there first. I my grudge cherry had been popped. Then of course watched Juan 2 and all that stuff. So they're remaking it again. And this time, they are bringing on the director. Jeez, I can't believe I didn't pay attention to the name. The director of Eyes of My Mother.
Okay.
I got to get the name. Sorry.
Nicholas Pesce?
That's right. Pesce.
Or Pesce?
Yeah. Joe Pesce. Hey. That's how they fuck you.
Fuck you at the drive-thru.
So our pal, and I gotta be honest, I haven't watched Eyes of My Mother yet.
Oh, me neither, but I've heard it's really good.
Right, that's what I keep hearing. I keep hearing it's great, and I just haven't gotten around to watching it. So, even though I've seen about 8 minutes of Ouija Experiment 2, I can't explain that either. So the quote here is that it's going to be kind of a different animal. They're describing this movie as a very different thing, but very much a grudge movie. Which is the only way that this sounds interesting to me. And the larger point I would make about this is that the grudge movies at heart are theme park rides. It's
right.
We're going to take you through the scary house. Here are the ghosts. Here's some creepiness. And then on the back end of it, you're safe and sound and everybody goes home happy. And so those movies kind of live and die on the quality of the gags. And I think that the reason Ju-on works so well is that those gags are terrifying. the little kid, like, toe squatting at the edge of a bed screaming at you is terrifying. You know, the woman coming up through the quilt and all that stuff. Speaking of quilts, hey. Some of them's haunted, it turns out. I think that I don't know what a different kind of grudge movie looks like, I guess. I think that you have to respect that these movies are kind of not tawdry entertainment, but that's what they are. I mean, it is like these movies are built to just scare you.
Right.
And all the mythology and that kind of stuff is fine, but let's not let it get in the way of why we're here. And I'm worried that they're going to pull a thing like they did with the movie Rings, where they try to, you know, reinvent the mythology a little bit and twist it. And it's like, that's not what makes these movies scary. Nobody gives a shit about this. Like, nobody cared in Ringu what the fuck was going on. Who cares about the experiments and Sadako and all that stuff? Nobody cares. What we're here for is the creepy girl coming out of the TV and make that work for me. And give me just enough story to make that a thing that I can believe, and we're done. So, I don't know. Like, I know you enjoy the Ju-ons of the world as well.
Yeah.
Are you excited about this?
When I saw the article title, I was excited. And then I saw, oh, it's not from Japan, you know, or Asia, other than one of the producers, supposedly. We're living in this age of remakes where everyone's questioning, like, why remakes? Why do they keep doing this? Why do they have to keep doing this? Like, look, to get something in the theater, apparently, it has to be a known property, whether it's comic book movies or a remake or a sequel or everything. And it's really, it's not going away. Hollywood has been remaking movies since the beginning of Hollywood. I mean, I think, was it The Maltese Falcon was a remake?
Yeah.
You know, the classic one that everyone remembers has been done just a few years before the one we all love. And then it's just compounding and getting bigger and bigger. And now everything's a remake. And like, as long as it's interesting, I don't care if it's terrible. If it's going to be terrible, at least be funny terrible, like that Wicker Man remake.
Right, right.
You know, but just don't do something that isn't interesting. Like, everyone's, like, ripping their own leg off and chewing on it when they hear about this Suspiria remake. And I'm like, God, at least it looks interesting from the set photos. And it's going to have a weird soundtrack. And just go. Who cares if Ozzy Argento's pissed off about it? Just go. Just make it. I don't care. Just, you know, we can't stop these remakes from happening. Like, all the really good original films, for better or for worse, you know, The Void we've been talking about, you're going to see it on demand somewhere. It's not going to go to theaters. So if you're going to the theaters like I do all the time, you're going to go see Rings. You're going to go see The Blair Witch. You're going to go see Tyler Perry's Boo, Medea Halloween, which is a remake of John Carpenter's Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
No, I accurate. Wish it had been. That would have been so great. Anyway, I actually really love that movie.
You're the reason I have that on my shelf.
Yay! So it's like the Japan is still making Sadako movies with, you know, varying degrees of success. So of course we're gonna keep making The Grudge things. I will give it a chance because I still love going to the theater to see a horror movie, even if it's like that Blair Witch sequel, was it Blair Witch 2016 or whatever? It was so not good, mm-hmm. but I'm really glad I saw it because I had a blast at the theater with it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I that's a movie that is tough to return to because all I can see is how it doesn't work. Yeah. And but when I saw it in the theater, it was a good time because some of the scares are good. It's just when you take 2 seconds to think about anything that's happening in that movie, things start to fall apart real fast.
And that happened to me with the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. I went to the theater by myself. I walked out like skipping like down the sidewalk. Like, that was so great. Went on my blog and wrote a quick like, yeah, that's pretty awesome. And then all of a sudden I realized that no one in the world felt like that. Everyone else was pissed off. And then I was like, well, yeah, it's pretty bad, but I really enjoyed it in theaters.
Yeah, that movie is troublesome because Jackie Earl Haley actually gives a good performance.
He's very good. And then people don't like that makeup. And I'm like, that makeup is hard to look at. It is so grotesque.
Yeah.
I don't see how people think it's dumb.
I think the line, "Why are you screaming? I haven't even started cutting you yet," is horrifying. It's really good. And then the rest of the movie is kind of garbage.
All about those micro naps.
The movie makes the mistake of trying to question whether or not an overt child molester might be the good guy in this story. and it's like, you don't need that. You're fucking up. Like, that question does not need to be raised. Just let him be the villain and don't waste 20 minutes of my time with, but maybe he was killed, you know, as a result of just a misunderstanding. And it's like, well, no, clearly not. So why did we waste all that time? Why did you want to make me feel any sympathy for this character if he's our true villain? Anyway, I got my problems. And then the micro.
That was supposed to be a twist. That was their idea of a twist.
I suppose, but it just felt like, why are you trying to like gin up sympathy for a murderous molester? Anyway, I'll go to the grave asking that question.
That will be on your grave, that question.
Yes. But yeah, so, I mean, to your point, like, my favorite movie of all time is a remake. The Thing is my favorite thing. So I don't knee-jerk hate the idea of a remake. But I hope that they just don't try to whip too much seriousness on this. Because as somber as Ju-on and even The Grudge is, those movies are kind of silly. And I know that's a fine line to walk. That's a delicate balance. But I think Shimizu understands, at least, that you've got to go for the scare sometimes for the sake of the story, just because this thing is going to be super creepy. And
that's hard to do.
Yeah, it's still eerie. Little Toshio and his meowing ass.
Meow. I started the show with that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I started our recording with that.
Oh, Toshio.
Toshi.
That's the new song coming exclusively from Legion Podcast. Oh, Toshio. The summertime hit. So it's game time. So we like to kind of round things out with a little bit of would you rather. So we've got a couple for us here. Darren poses this. You have won a prize, he says. The prize has two options, and you can choose either, but not both. The first option is a year in Europe with a monthly stipend of $2,000. The second option is 10 minutes on the moon. Which option do you select? And I'm going to go so far as to say this 10 minutes on the moon, appropriate travel attire for a trip to the moon.
Oh, okay.
It's not an immediate suicide as your blood freezes in your veins.
Okay. Oh, do you want me to answer first?
Yeah. I'm going
to. I'll pick the 10 minutes in Europe.
That's wrong.
Oh, shit. Well, the moon is fake, so obviously the $2,000 is it $2,000 an hour in Europe?
No, it's a month. It's not okay. You're not making money hand over fist, but you're getting by.
That's not enough. I would have to start prostituting, and I know Europeans like some hot American dude ass.
Sure.
So I'd be making like $50,000 a month. So yes, Europe for a year or two.
It's a 1 year, $2,000 a month plus your prostituting wages. So you're gonna be doing well. I mean, some of that money is clearly gonna need to go towards clinics to keep yourself clean and on the job. But All right, so you're in Europe, you're saying.
Yes. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. 10 minutes on the moon. Why would you not want to stand on the surface of another, you know, planetoid and look back at your planet? Planetoid. Look, astronomy has the most amazing lingo. Meteors, comets, planetoids, black holes, all of that stuff. It's just, you know, it's the reason I like science fiction movies. It's just because people sound smart when they're talking. Even in bad science fiction, they're like, we've got to move the moleculator, and I'm like, yes. Ooh. You must you gotta move that thing. You don't want an errant moleculator around your lab. But I've always thought that, like, you know, traveling to space of any kind. Yeah, they say there's that effect that astronauts have who have, or anyone who has been out of the Earth's atmosphere and has the ability to look down on the planet, that it provides you with a perspective that, as you would imagine, you just could never get anywhere else. And that astronauts tend to come back of kind of changed by the experience. So as someone who enjoys hallucinogens, I also am looking for ways to alter my perception. And going to the moon seems like a good way to do that. And probably cheaper.
I do like looking down on people.
I do have a haughtiness about me.
A naughtiness.
A naughty haughtiness that allows me. Like, that would be a thing that I pulled out at parties in a real dickish way. Of like, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't be at your party. I was on the moon. Sorry about that.
What a show off.
I was having a life-changing experience millions of miles away from the surface of our planet, getting the briefest glimpse at the eternal. But you had sausage cheese balls, you say. Huh.
You're like, I've had moon cheese. Get that cheddar away from me.
I had Munda cheese. I don't know.
Munda?
That was a stretch. Damien. The witch. He axes us. Would you rather cosplay as Sean Connery and Zardoz or Elvira, Queen of the Dark?
Man. Well, I have the same bust size as Elvira.
Uh-huh.
And I have the exact same package, you know, in my downstairs area.
Uh-huh.
As Sean Connery did as a baby. So
thanks for keeping it clean.
Just keeping it shaved. And so I would just do both, combination of both.
You would do the Zarvira, Eldaz, one of those.
Yes.
All right. I'll accept it. I would go Zardoz here only because it would be horrifying and hilarious in equal measure. And also the Elvira get up. I don't know that I could walk in heels. I just don't think I have that in me. I respect it, ladies.
Well, God, when I think you. Of when I think of all of the Legion podcasters and which of them I'd want to see in the Zardoz outfit the most, obviously Scottish Beau comes to mind.
Yeah. Well, I'm I would not be against that either. You know, and he does those Thursday feeds. I'll just have to throw this idea his way of like, you need to dress up in Zardoz the next time you do one of those. And I think we can talk him into it. He's weak-willed. Peer pressure works like a champ with that guy.
Thank God.
Yeah, I know. It's how I get him to steal stuff for me.
Nice.
Yeah. I haven't worked a real job in weeks. living off Scottish Beau's back. Yeah. He steals it. He fences it. PayPal's it over to me.
I think one Thirsty Thursday, they should do Hungry Wednesday. And we all just go to Scotland and eat sushi off his body.
Oh, yeah. Also like that Mark Hamill movie. Which is a real thing, unfortunately.
What? Which Mark Hamill movie?
It's called Sushi Girl.
He's in Sushi Girl?
He is in Sushi Girl.
Is he the girl?
No.
Does he play the sushi?
Yes. He is very talented. And it's weird because the sushi is constantly complaining about moisture converters.
the moisture farm.
Yeah, I get it. Star Wars. That, like, Star Wars is the perfect amount of science fiction for me. Just enough. Just enough.
Maybe too much.
At times too much. Certainly in those prequels. It got a little like, look how cool this is. It's like, eh, that's not what I need. I need people sword fighting.
Needs more politics.
It needs more trade talk. Because there is nothing that audiences clamor for more than a discussion of trade negotiations.
Agreed.
But
that's what made the Matrix movies so popular.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So that, sir, is going to do it here for Horror Hangover. Richard, you have, as always, been a delight. Lovely.
Thank you.
Talented. Where can people who might want more of this find you?
You can find, hello, this is, oh my gosh, I choked. I literally choked.
Welcome to adulthood, young man.
I am 70. So you can find Hello, This is the Doom Show at hellodoomshow.podomatic.com. Brad came up with a secret name for the show. It's Jello Jello, Who Moved the Tombstone. But don't look up that because you won't find it. It's not official yet. of course, we're at Legion Podcasts because we're so proud to be here. We love it. We're shoulder to shoulder with much better shows. And you can hear Brad and Jeffrey and Simon and I talking about Giallo, Slasher, and everything else. And doomedmoviethon.com for more movie-thon.
Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah. You know, we like to look, this is the beginning of a weekend. You want to leave happy. You want to leave feeling supported. That you're part of something and that you got something to be proud of. And that's how you're starting the weekend. So thanks to all who listen. Appreciate it very much. And yeah, check out all the stuff going on legionpodcasts.com. You know, referenced it earlier. Me and Scottish Bo are doing the Twin Peaks show, and that thing's gotten real dumb. And seems to know no bottom. Like we're plumbing the depths of how stupid a podcast can be and still be something people listen to. We got the Hail Ming Power Hour continues to be a juggernaut.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good show. And I say this every week until I get it. New Girls Will Be Ghouls coming soon, I hope. So I don't know that. I don't. They haven't told me. As I've described it on the show before, it's like a little gift shows up in my email inbox that's like, here's new Girls Will Be Ghouls. And there should be some. So, yeah. So check out everything there. If you would, hop over to iTunes or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating and review as positive a one as you can stand. And we'll be back in two more weeks to talk to some other people about some other stuff. So that's it. Have a great weekend, everybody. Say goodbye, Richard.
Bye. Later. See ya.
Ooh, professional.